Hi there, everyone. This is Dave Ainsworth. We are doing the ongoing CNL study podcast. I'm joined today by Perla Baldugo. Perla?
Good morning, everybody. So the topic for this morning will be on evidence-based practice. That percent of evidence-based practice will account for the CNL exam. These topics that I outlined here are taken directly out of King and Girard. So please review these first two slides. It does list what you need to focus on in terms of evidence-based practice. First of all, research utilization versus evidence-based practice. As a CNL, most of the work that's being conducted in terms of the microsystem will be looking at evidence-based practice and how can that concept be applied to clinical practice or the microsystem in which we work in. How it differs from research utilization is that research is conducted when there is a gap in knowledge. Table 13.1, again from King and Girard, does list that evidence-based practice and research and the research process begins in the same manner. We begin by looking at identifying a clinical problem and then reviewing the literature and searching for evidence. It's at that point that the conductor of the research, or am I following the research route, or am I now following evidence-based practice? Again, the routes are different, but in the end, the data will be collected and presented or published. So why are we pursuing evidence-based practice? Well, clinicians are encountering situations daily in which they don't have all the information they'd like to care for their patients. For instance, in our facility, we're looking at things like just your basic quality outcomes that all organizations are looking into, such as our CAUTI rates, our pressure ulcer pressure injury rates, or CLABSI. Everybody's looking at how can we make our practice better and our care for our patients better in terms of improving patient outcomes. It does start with the Peacock question, which is a key to the evidence-based practice. Why evidence-based practice? Because it cultivates a spirit of inquiry. We ask questions that reflect uncertainties in clinical practice. We start by formulating the PICO question and searching for information. We went through and we'll go through critically appraising the information, integrating into evidence, evaluating the outcomes, and then again disseminating the outcomes. P stands for the patient, population, or disease. For example, the elderly with congestive heart failure, or the obese patient, or the, say, the demented population, or the population of patients with CAUTI. The intervention, I stands for intervention or the issue of interest. An example is a specific therapy or educational intervention. C stands for comparison intervention. An example of that would be an alternate therapy or placebo or disease, or maybe no disease at all. O stands for outcome. And T stands for time it takes for the intervention. Here are different types of questions that, as a clinician, you will be considering, such as, is it a therapy or intervention type of question, a diagnosis or assessment, is it a prognosis type of question, an etiology or a meaning or purpose type of question. Strategies for locating evidence. As clinicians, we look at academic journals such as CINAHL. As nurses, we look at CINAHL first, PubMed, Cochrane. We look at literature that's within at least the first 5 years before we start searching for publications that are beyond that time frame. Be familiar with and practice different methods for searching for evidence and data. We look at things such as meta-analysis or meta-synthesis. You could join different types of journal clubs, workshops, and conferences to locate the information that you need to approach. Here is just a hierarchy of evidence. And again, you could refer to your King and Girard book. I believe this is Melnick hierarchy of evidence, with level one being the highest. You could think of it in terms of a pyramid, where at the very top, the highest level of evidence would be something that's a meta-analysis, randomized control studies, and clinical practice guidelines. Level two are just single random controlled trials, followed by level three, which are quasi-experiment without randomization, and so forth. So quality versus quantitative type of evidence. Qualitative is non-numeric. They're observations or words or interviews that were conducted during the research process. They explain relationships or lived experiences of the participants to describe in their words, in their own words, their thoughts and perceptions and their experiences. They're concepts that emerge from processes, and they're useful in creating screening tools and increasing patient satisfaction. So as healthcare clinicians in the hospital, sometimes it's difficult to get numeric data, which is what quantitative data is, because we cannot always quantify the information that the patient, that we try to receive from the patient. For instance, if, you know, some of the questions would be things like your care experience in the hospital. Now, how does the food taste? If you're trying to see how well you can improve in the food that is being served in the hospital. Everybody knows that food is a big satisfier. And so on the HCAHPS scores, that's a big thing. So, you know, you may want to go a qualitative route when you're asking these questions. Quantitative, again, I think is very straightforward. It's data that's in numeric form. They produce outcomes that reflect cause and effect. That's a big thing for quantitative research. It produces very strong evidence if it's done correctly, and it seeks to control, define, and predict outcomes in a very systematic manner. Qualitative is not statistics. It is not cause and effect like quantitative is. It's more perceptions and attitudes and feelings versus what quantitative, which is just measurements of numeric points. What are the different types of evidence that we could appraise? Again, systematic reviews. Meta-analysis is an integration of quantitative studies versus meta-synthesis, which is an integration of qualitative studies. Randomized controlled trials is one of the highest level of evidence. It's true evidence that contains three types of elements: an intervention, a control, and randomization. And we have quasi-experiments, which is just as important. However, the difference between an RCT and a quasi-experiment is that a quasi-experiment does not contain randomization. Cohort study is a prospective type of study that begins with gathering two groups of patients, one that receives exposure and the other that you're measuring over time. Two types of cohort studies are prospective and retrospective studies, with prospective being the stronger of the designs. There's also case studies, which is an intensive investigation of a case involving a person or small groups of persons, an issue or an event. And there's also case control studies. This is a type of research that is retrospective, and it compares characteristics of individuals with a certain type of condition that you're looking into. So that, in a nutshell, was evidence-based practice. What I didn't include in the slides, and you may need to refer back to when we took the course on nursing inquiry, which is how to appraise the evidence that you have. In class, we did use John Hopkins' rapid appraisal, but there are different types of appraisal tools that you can use, and it's very important because it does go over the statistical parts that you need in determining if the research that you're looking at has significant findings. The next section that we have, I pulled the questions from our review book, and I actually did some of, I signed up for that AACN, that pre-study or pre-examination. So I pulled some of the questions and I threw it on. If you guys were ready, we could go through the questions. As a CNL, you identify the PCOT method as the most common method to develop a clear clinical question. In the PCOT acronym, what does I represent? Idea, issue or intervention, interaction or income. I in PCOT stands for issue or intervention. Okay? It's the question that we have at hand. What is the issue at hand, or what is the intervention that we're trying to perform that we think would improve in patient outcome? Next question. As a CNL, you recognize the importance of evaluating the literature based on strength of evidence and credibility. Using the 7 levels hierarchy recommended by Milnick and Bino Overhaul, you identify which type of literature as the strongest. A, expert opinion or committee reports. B, case-controlled and cohort studies. C, systematic reviews of qualitative studies. Or D, quasi-experimental studies without randomization. Yeah, if you know, and you know, again, it does point, the question does, is specific in saying that they're looking at Melnick's hierarchy. Because again, when you're looking at these different review books, they might not be using Melnick. But I think when we took the exam, I think they did refer to Melnick. So for any of you studying for the exam, look at Melnick's hierarchy. I think that'll get you through the exam in terms of trying to figure out the strength of the evidence. So the answer in this question is quasi-experimental studies without randomization. When you're looking at the four that were offered, so quasi is the highest of the levels in this question. As a CNL, you identify the Picot method as the most common method to develop a clear clinical question. In the Picot acronym, what does C represent? Cost, clinical issue, comparison intervention, and circumstances. I think this should be easy because Picot, in my mind, should be memorized for any CNL. It's comparison intervention. You need to be comparing your intervention, like some sort of baseline with what your intervention is. As a CNL, you recognize that there are many barriers to implementing evidence-based practice. One of the following list, which is not a barrier to implementation. A, difficulty in determining a clinical question. B, lack of access to clinical library or computers. C, failure to understand importance of evidence-based practice. And D, multiple clinical issues present within the microsystem. We're looking at what is not a barrier to implement. And the answer is D, multiple clinical issues present within the microsystem. While the multiple clinical issues within the microsystem may lead to difficulties in identifying which problem to focus on primarily, it is not a barrier to the implementation of evidence-based practice. Next question. When searching databases to find evidence in academic journals, in which database are you least likely to find nursing-related content? PubMed, JSTOR, Medline, or CINAHL? And so the database we are least likely to find any type of nursing-related content would be B, JSTOR. I can't tell you what that stands for because I've never heard of it. I guess it's some sort of social science database. As a CNL, you recognize that qualitative evidence, and here are your options, A, has no place in progression or advancement of nursing as a science. B, cannot be incorporated into the development of evidence-based practice due to its reliance on non-quantifiable data. C, may not be as strong as evidence as well-designed quantitative studies but does not provide valuable information that can be used to improve practice. And D, is often the strongest level of evidence available when being used to improve clinical practice. So again, we're looking at qualitative evidence. So our answer to this question is C. Qualitative evidence, while not as high a level of evidence as quantitative studies, it is a valuable resource of information when improving nursing practice. It has a valuable place in the development of nursing and often provides narrative data regarding patients. It can be used to help guide and develop evidence-based practice. Next question. After developing an evidence-based practice improvement into your microsystem and evaluating the findings, you find no measurable improvement. How do you disseminate the findings of this project? Do you, A, do not disseminate the findings unless results are measurable or significant? B, disseminate results only with the stakeholders of the project? C, disseminate results the same as if the findings had been significant? Or D, falsify the findings to find evidence? And our answer is C, findings should always be disseminated regardless of success in order to advance nursing knowledge and potentially aid in the development of future evidence-based improvement. Findings should never be falsified to make up signals. All of the following are key components of evidence-based practice, except A, use of evidence, B, patient preferences and values, C, clinical or professional judgment based on expertise, or D, conducting a clinical trial. So all of the following are key components of evidence-based practice, except D, conducting a clinical trial. Conducting a clinical trial is not a component of evidence-based practice. Quantitative studies are best described as studies reliant on which of the following? A, data in numeric form. B, multiple clinical questions. C, observations or interviews. Or D, large patient populations. Their quantitative studies are best described as data in numeric form. Qualitative studies are best described as studies relying on which type of the problem? A, data in numeric form. B, multiple clinical questions. C, observations or interviews. Or D, large patient population. So for qualitative studies, they're defined as being reliant on observations and interviews. They're the data that is non-numeric in form. Next question. As a CNL, you recognize the importance of sharing the findings of your evidence-based practice implementation. Of the following places to disseminate findings, which are appropriate avenues for the CNL to use? A, academic journals. B, academic journals and conferences. C, academic journals, conferences, and internet. And D, academic journals, conferences, TV, radio, and the internet. So as a CNL, you want to use all avenues to publish or disseminate your findings. So the answer would be D. You just use everything that you could possibly use. The final step in evidence-based practice or research is ultimately the same. What is the final step? So again, it goes back to the chart that I showed you in the beginning of the presentation, evidence-based practice versus research utilization. The process for both begins the same way, but once you gather all your information, the step is then, is there a gap in knowledge, or are you looking to gather the best clinical practices that are out there? So, but in the final step after gathering your data is then just presenting and publishing the data. Our answer for this question, the final step is presenting or publishing findings. You are the CNL on the medical floor. Preparing to investigate the gaps in the transition and admission process for patients being direct admitted through the outpatient clinics. To study this issue, you recognize the importance of developing your clinical question using the patient population, issue intervention, comparison intervention, outcome time, which is the PCOT method, because of which of the following? A, to clearly articulate the issue which drives the evidence-based practice process. B, to articulate the question within nursing language. C, there is no evidence that the PCOT method should be used. D, to ensure others reviewing your data understand the scope of your clinical issue. So the question is very long. But what you want to do, it's done to clearly articulate the issue which drives the evidence-based practice method. What is the CNL's role in managing evidence in relation to the staff on their unit? A, creating and fostering a culture of evidence within the microsystem. B, controlling the flow of evidence into the microsystem. C, creating evidence within the microsystem. D, developing evidence-based practice improvements and educating staff on the changes. So the answer is A. The CNL should primarily create a culture of evidence within his or her microsystem. The CNL should not control the flow of evidence into the system, as this does not allow for the nurse's independent practice. The CNL should not create all evidence for the microsystem and should utilize multiple sources without. While the CNL should develop evidence-based practice improvements, and educate staff on changes that is not his or her primary role in managing evidence in relation to staff. Next question. As a CNL on the surgical floor, you have been asked to review and update the current protocol for epidural management in post-op patients. What type of evidence is most appropriate to use in updating this policy? A. Expert opinion from a committee composed of surgeons, hospitalists, and staff nurses. B. A systematic review of epidural management practices based on clinical practice guidelines. C. Case-controlled and cohort studies of post-op patients with epidurals and management of care. And D, a systematic review of nursing narrative regarding epidural management. The answer is B, a systematic review of epidural management practices based on CPGs. Again, that's one of the highest level of evidence. It's actually placed in Melnick's hierarchy as level one, together with meta-analysis. As a CNL, you understand the fine differences between research and evidence-based practice. You know evidence-based practice is conducted when, A, there are one or more best practices that can be applied to practice, B, that there's a gap in clinical knowledge, C, there are needs identified within your microsystem, and D, evidence-based practice is always conducted. The answer is A, there are one or more best practices that can be applied to practice. Again, research examines gaps in knowledge. As a CNL, you recognize the qualitative evidence. You recognize that a qualitative evidence is A, has no place in the progression of advancement of nursing as a science. B, cannot be incorporated into the development of evidence-based practice due to its reliance on non-quantifiable data. C, may not be as strong as strong of evidence as well-designed quantitative studies, but does provide valuable information that can be used to improve practice. And D, is often the strongest level of evidence available when using to improve clinical practice. So qualitative evidence, while not as high a level of evidence as quantitative studies, is still a valuable resource of information in improving nursing practice. It has a valuable place in the development of nursing and often provides narrative data regarding patients. It can be used to help guide and develop evidence-based practice. Okay, so these questions now are not from King and Jura. These are questions that I took as part of some sort of, to see a pre-assessment of where you are when you're studying for the exam. This is pretty long. Two random control trials look at the effectiveness of the administration of steroids in reducing deaths associated with brain injury. Trial number one has a 95% confidence interval of 0.51 to 1.34 with a calculated odds ratio of 1. Trial two has a 95% confidence interval of 0.15 to 0.872, which includes an odds ratio of 1. Which of the following best describes the correct interpretation of the following information given? A, the outcome between the two groups in both trials is statistically significant, and the difference in the calculated confidence interval can be explained by bias. B, the outcome between the two groups in both trials is not statistically significant, and the difference in the calculated confidence interval can be explained by the degree of sensitivity. C, the statistics for these types of trials are not applicable. A cross-sectional design using likelihood would be preferable. Error D, the outcome between the two groups in both trials is not statistically significant, and the difference in the calculated confidence interval can be explained by sample size. So it's a pretty lengthy question. So what is the answer? The answer is D. The 95% confidence interval in both trials includes the odds ratio of 1.0, indicating no difference in risk between the two groups, and therefore suggests a non-statistical significant difference between the intervention and the control group. The larger the sample size, the tighter or the more narrow the confidence interval. Here's a shorter question. Which of the following study designs provides the highest level of empirical evidence? A, case, B, cohort, C, randomized control, or D, ethnographic? And everybody should have gotten this one. It's C. Properly executed randomized control trials provide the strongest empirical evidence. Next question. The CNL is interested in evaluating a new program utilizing a pharmacist, nurse, and physician team to manage patient medication use and education. Compared with a unit using traditional medication management and education, the CNL will be comparing mean costs per day and patient satisfaction scores between the two groups. The best analysis for this data would be which of the following? A, chi-square test, B, Pearson's production correlation, C, independent samples t-test, or D, ANOVA, A-N-O-V-A, which you think is the best analysis for data that should be used. So the answer is C. The independent samples t-test compares the means of two independent groups in order to determine whether there is statistical evidence that the associated population means are significantly different. The independent sample t-test is a parametric test. So if you're not very good with all the statistics, it's wise to review some of these. I wouldn't say you need to review all of them, but you'll see Pearson's on the exam, I believe. You'll be asked questions about the previous question on confidence intervals, odds ratio, I think I saw on the exam. So familiarize yourself with the terminology. Next question. A CNL is helping to treat a patient who has been out of work for 3 weeks due to low back pain. The patient, whose goal is to return to work as a truck driver, asks if attending back school would be more effective than physical therapy. Which of the following is the CNL's best initial action? A, advocate for the patient to attend back school. B, suggest the patient discuss this with his provider. C, initiate a case conference to determine the best approach. Or D, review literature regarding treatment options. Okay. The answer is D. Reviewing literature and seeking and providing information are the best evidence of a CNL's responsibility. I think the questions I put here, I think I threw all the questions that I had. So it's not just evidence-based practice focus. Next question. An adult med-surg unit cares for many patients who are cognitively impaired. In developing a policy and procedure for pain assessment and management, the CNL should A, use pain assessment tools that a large reputable teaching hospital uses, B, evaluate pain assessment practice guidelines for this population, C, review the pain assessment tools currently being utilized in this facility, D, formulate policy based on previous experiences with pain assessment. The answer is B. Practice guidelines should be evaluated first before developing policy and procedures. Next question. We're almost done here. A CNL wants to change unit-based care processes as a result of outcome data. The best course of action for this CNL is to A, write a concept paper that outlines the plan and its rationale for the CNO. B, solicit staff input regarding what approaches should be used to improve the care outcomes. C, identify attending physicians with high unit admission rates and seek their support. Or D, design an implementation plan and present it to the staff at a unit team meeting. The answer is C. The CNL should seek and present best evidence regarding the processes as well as solicit input from staff in order to encourage ownership of the needed changes. Next question. And CNL is conducting a literature review on ventilator-associated pneumonia. Which of the following is the strongest level of evidence? A, nationwide benchmarking of best practices. B, single descriptive study of ventilator-associated pneumonia rates. C, practice guidelines based on systematic review of RCTs. Or D, a large randomized control trial in a large academic setting. So what should the CNL do? C is the answer. Evidence-based practice guidelines are based on rigorous review of strongest evidence available. And that was it. So if anybody wants the slides, let me know. I can email it to you. It's really hard to look at the information, the questions, just by listening to it sometimes. So if you're the one who's more visual, then let me know. You know, I got to be honest here. The King and Gerard book, although it was very good in reviewing for the exam, I think you need to look at other resources that are out there. On the AACN site, you know, again, it's $50 for that assessment that I took, but it kind of tells you and gives you a gauge of where you need to focus your studies on. And I thought that the questions that were presented were more, were closer to the types of questions that I found on the exam that I took. Yeah, I mean, I was going ad nauseum with the King and Gerard book, and it seems so simple, but I think you really need to expand your resources and look. I know they have a curriculum that you could pay for. It's pretty costly. I didn't pay for that. I know maybe a few people in our class probably did. And you can ask them how well that they felt, you know, prepared them for the exam. I didn't. I just used the pre-assessment plus King and Gerard.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks, Perla, for joining us. And that is evidence-based practice. We will wrap things up for this session. Hope to see you again next time.